Welcome to Toati Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Liat Meyerfeld, and today we are learning Melachim Aleph, chapter 17. Eliyahu the prophet bursts onto the scene in a storm, and he will stay with us till the end of time. Without unnecessary introductions, he informs King Ahav, "I swear in the name of Hashem whom I serve, there will be no more rain or dew except by my word." What is this first impression of Eliyahu? In my mind, Eliyahu is a kind, wise old man. He joins our Seder, and the kids get all giddy when this wine goes down. He comes to our Simchas. He's bringing Mashiach and answering all questions. I have a bunch, so I'm looking forward to that. It's surprising to read that the first encounter the world has with Eliyahu begins with a radical, threatening statement to Ahav the king, which seems to come with no context. Why this threat? Does Eliyahu control the rain? Did the threat actualize? In order to understand Eliyahu's personality and role, we go back to the last verse of chapter 16. There we learn that Chiel founded the city of Jericho. Joshua's curse on the builder came true, and Chiel's sons all died. The Yerushalmi Talmud shows us that Chiel's behavior is the connective thread that brings King Ahav and Eliyahu to this first theological standoff. The two of them meet when visiting Chiel, who was sitting Shiva for his sons, and it got heated. Out of his great pain, Chiel wonders out loud if his suffering is really the fulfillment of Joshua's curse. Hello? Isn't it obvious? Eliyahu responds with what we all know. Joshua's curse had come true. Blessed is Hashem who upholds the words of the righteous. I don't know if he was asked, but Ahav stirs up the theological debate, taunting Eliyahu. You talk about the righteous and their powers? Who is greater, Moshe or Joshua? Everyone takes the bait and answers, Moshe. Ahav, feeling empowered, continues and says, You all said Shema three times today? Moshe there in Shema swore in Hashem's name that if we turn from him and worship idols, v'saltem v'avadatem Elohim acherim v'ishtachavitem lahem, Hashem will rage anger and stop the rain. V'charaf Hashem b'chem v'atzar et ha-shamayim v'lo yeh matar. And I, King Ahav, I worship every idol in the world, and the heavens bring me blessings. The rain has not stopped, and the land continues to yield crops. If Moshe's oath is not fulfilled, why would Joshua's oath be fulfilled? Eliyahu hears Ahav. Really hears him, and understands that in his words, Ahav is challenging not just these words of Hashem, but the entire concept of reward and punishment, Hashem's involvement in the world, our responsibilities to him. Till now, Ahav exerted emotional influences on the people to worship idols. Here, Ahav's aim is to debate intellectually and to rationally convince the nation to disconnect from Hashem. Ahav's words endanger the existence and continuity of the people of Israel, and Eliyahu vows to silence Ahav, to prove the words of the Shema and stop the rain. There is no doubt that with his oath, Eliyahu proves that no wrong goes unpunished. There is liberty, but also justice for all. And more than that, here we have a nation that's happy to let Ahav spread idolatry because it's comfortable. There's economic growth, international relations, freedom to behave as they wish. Please don't bother us with the facts. Eliyahu needs to show everyone that if you abuse the system, it will ultimately crash. Not just if you take too much from the earth, also if you mistreat it. If you don't live with kindness and truth, ultimately the land will not play along. If you use and abuse the system, it collapses. This is one lesson from stopping the rain. Look what happens when you don't behave correctly. The earth itself revolts. Eliyahu wants to teach everyone that the truth is worth the effort. Boundaries and rules will ultimately help your fields and your finances will flourish. Don't ignore Hashem, even if it's sometimes of a struggle. We learn here of Eliyahu's uncompromising character. He isn't afraid to say difficult things, even when comforting mourners, a figure that has the zeal and the desire to preserve tradition. The epic struggle between Ahav and Izebel versus Eliyahu finds its focal point in rain, and that, of course, is not random. Eliyahu thinks that withholding rain will pressure them and others into abandoning their commitment to Baal worship. Baal is the worship of wealth and finance. In an agricultural society with no great rivers, this is defined by rainfall, so the local Baal is the rain god. The Torah conditions, only total commitment to Hashem's laws will guarantee the rain. Baal worship offered an alternative guarantee of rainfall, and with it economic stability and prosperity. You didn't need to keep any mitzvahs, and you'd have success. The desperate Israeli farmer whose crops and livelihood were threatened by drought, he might have felt that in order to ensure his family's survival, a visit to the local Baal was an excusable small religious infraction. Let's not forget the sexual component, which is such a strong drive for sin. An entire mythological world was built around the Baal being the male counterpart to the female Asherah. The rain god fertilized the Asherah tree, who is often portrayed as a pregnant woman. This concept led to cultic sexual rites in the temples of Baal. Prostitution would simulate and stimulate the gods, bringing the desired rainfall and its ensuing abundance. Torah required consistent moral behavior and commitment to Hashem. The Baal allowed for sexual promiscuity. So you see, we understand the almost magnetic attraction for the Jewish people to the Baal from when they entered the land until the destruction of the temple. The commentary jury is out regarding Eliyahu taking this extreme step on his own initiative or if he was told to do so by Hashem. Eliyahu saw Ahav and Izebel getting away with murder and Baal worship, and he fights for Hashem's honor. He wrestles the key to rainfall from Hashem, who almost regretfully gives him the power to bring or stop the rain. We see that Hashem is holding back. Only part of Eliyahu's oath is fulfilled. After 3 years, when Hashem tells Eliyahu that he's sending down rain, but not dew. Eliyahu's threat was no rain or dew. Dew is not mentioned as returning. Why not? Because despite Eliyahu's threat to stop the dew as well as the rain, according to the Talmud, the dew never stopped, and dew will never stop. We know that from experience too. Whereas rain in Israel in the winter is sporadic and unpredictable, and there are frequent years filled with drought, dew is continuously and reliably present. Dew is the ultimate, most desired blessing that Yitzchak gives to Yaakov instead of Esav. Vayiten lecha Elokim mital ha-shamayim u'mishmanei ha-aretz v'rov dagan v'tirosh. Hashem will give you the dew of the heaven and the fat of the earth and plentiful grain and vineyards. Dew coated the man in the desert beneath and above. The Lubavitcher Rebbe beautifully explains a verse about rain and dew. May my teachings come down as the rain, ya'arov kamatar likri, my speech flow as the dew, tizol katar imrati. Torah teachings are likened to both rain and dew. The significant difference between the two is that the extent to which rain falls is dependent on our merits, whereas dew's condensation is not. Rain is the aspect of Hashem's goodness that we must earn through our good deeds, whereas dew is the flow of Hashem's goodness that we don't have to earn ourselves. Eliyahu fights to show Hashem's justice in this world. He needs to demonstrate the right way to live on the land that is proven through the promise of conditional rainfall. Dew, on the other hand, is chesed, the constant care with which Hashem relates to Israel in the mode of dew. With its almost invisible gentleness, it persists even through the most turbulent ups and downs of the relationship. Eliyahu is so passionate about justice that he finds it hard to understand the loving relationship that goes beyond it, lifnim mishurat adin. Hashem could override Eliyahu, of course, but that's not a way for him or anyone to develop. Hashem empowers Eliyahu and gives him the keys to the rain. He won't take the keys back until Eliyahu agrees to relinquish them. We will see that all the events that Yirmiyahu will now choose to share with us try to show Eliyahu, and us of course, the quiet and constant loving care symbolized by dew, so that Eliyahu will come to understand the nature of the eternal loving relationship of Hashem and the Jewish people. This was verse 1. I think that's it for now. Let's move on. Hashem first tells Eliyahu to travel east to the Wadi of Crete. There's no water there. Crete, from the root of Karet, cut off. But Eliyahu miraculously has water from a dried up riverbed, and ravens sustain him by bringing him bread and meat twice a day. Okay, I know we're supposed to be moving on, but I already have to stop this story. Ravens are specifically listed as a non-kosher species of birds. Tehillim describes that Hashem sustains young ravens that cry out, Livnei orev asher yikrau. Ravens are such cool creatures that they don't even sustain their own young, leaving them crying for food. And ravens will eat anything, so how could Eliyahu trust that the food these birds were bringing him was kosher? Of all the birds, why ravens? There's an opinion that says it was people that Eliyahu knew from the town of Orev. Okay, could be. The classic approach is that this is Hashem's critique of Eliyahu's severity in halting the rain. Eliyahu believed that Hashem should act with more judgment. By sending the non-kosher and cruel ravens, Hashem communicates to Eliyahu that he is acting like a raven. In another perspective, the raven symbolizes Ahav rather than Eliyahu. Ahav, leading the northern nation into idol worship, is compared to the raven's non-kosher status and cruel actions. However, Hashem is sending a stronger message to Eliyahu. Even from something seemingly negative like a raven, positivity can emerge. Ahav, if approached correctly, has the potential to bring about positive change. Hashem, in this interpretation, nudges Eliyahu away from his harsh stance towards Ahav. He's indicating that a gentler approach might yield better spiritual outcomes, chesed instead of judgment. The Gemara supports this, suggesting that the provisions brought by the ravens came from Ahav's kitchen, implying that something positive can come from Ahav, and implying that Ahav's kitchen is kosher. We see often that people who seem far from Torah have certain Jewish elements in their lives. Those ties might seem too small and even negligible to others, but that judgmental stance is not Hashem's perspective. Hashem is showing us that every connection that a person has is important and beloved. If nurtured, it stays strong and shines a light in people's journey. Eliyahu lived by the Wadi like a personal Eden in a fractured world, solitary, with extraordinary nature sustaining him and his personal connection with Hashem, complete oneness in a very basic, earth-connected way. The drought takes over, though, and even Eliyahu's Eden dries up. Hashem wants Eliyahu to realize that he isn't happy that the Jewish people are suffering. So Eliyahu stands there all dried up with nothing, but he still doesn't think his vow of no rain should change. So Hashem commands him to go to get to know the people firsthand. Hashem sends him to a widow in the north. Eliyahu comes from a place of aloneness and enters society, but not to a crowd, one woman with a child and nothing else, slowly, slowly for him to learn. On the outskirts of the city, Eliyahu sees a poor widow collecting sticks and asks her to bring him water and bread. Eliyahu's behavior is actually utterly outrageous. How could he demand food from an obviously extremely desperate widow? Plus, he demands that he be fed before she feeds herself and her son. Rashi explains that Eliyahu doesn't know which woman has been designated by Hashem to feed him, so he follows in the footsteps of Eliezer, Avram Avinu's servant, who identified Rivka as Yitzchak's wife from her kindness of watering his camels and himself. The widow recognizes Eliyahu as a man of God and kind of curses him. How are you asking me for this? In the name of your God, because of him, I have nothing. I am preparing our last supper, and you're asking me for water and bread? Eliyahu realizes that she is the designated widow, but that Hashem will help her sustain him through a miracle. Eliyahu asks her to go against her instincts and trust him. Exactly what Hashem is asking of Eliyahu. Make me a cake of bread, and then for yourself, then for your son. Against mother instincts, who would obviously first care for son, then herself, then a stranger. This is obviously a lesson for Eliyahu himself. While Eliyahu teaches her one of the greatest secrets of Hechnasat Orchim, bringing in guests, an understanding that will be brought to the forefront of our consciousness by the prophets and the Talmud rabbis. Greeting guests is not intuitive. Our instinct is to take care of self. Greeting guests is possible when a person develops a conscious understanding that I am also a stranger in the land, the conscious understanding that the land doesn't belong to me. Whatever I have is a gift that I am meant to be sharing with others. When the Torah says, bring in a guest, it doesn't mean inviting the friend that we feel comfortable with, that the conversation flows with, that the house naturally expands for. This person that there's natural room for, the Torah doesn't consider a guest. This is a ben bayit, literally a son of my house, sort of an honorary family member. When we invite our friends, when we show them our newest cookbook-level Instagram-worthy cooking, or when we potluck with neighbors, this is not the mitzvah of Hechnasat Orchim. This is me enjoying my life with my inner circle. Hechnasat Orchim is inviting the other, expanding self to include those who until now are on the outside of our circle. It's a recognition that the gifts I've been given by Hashem are a method of expanding self to include others and share the kindness. Eliyahu is starting this journey of education of expansion. He sees everyone as the other. He's very judgmental if your behavior is not up to his expectations. He curses the land because of the other's behavior that he finds unacceptable. Now he encounters a penniless widow, and he teaches her, but really through her he's the one who learns the Torah system of accepting others and inviting them in. Hashem's world doesn't revolve around my truth. Together with others, we are in Hashem's world, given as a kindness to all of us. As long as I acknowledge that none of it is mine, I can ask Hashem to use it all. I can expand my reality to recognize Hashem and include others. The widow has a handful of oil and a tiny vessel of flour. A handful of flour and a tiny vessel of oil. But Eliyahu gives her Hashem's promise. Kadakemach lo tichle v'tzapachet Hashemen lo tichsar. The flour and oil will not run out until Hashem brings the rain. Eliyahu acknowledges that there is Hashem above us guiding the world. Ultimately, it is Hashem who brings the rain. Hashem who knows what every person needs and showers them with all the necessary gifts. Later, her son is dying, and the widow yells at Eliyahu, "Why did you come to my house? Things were better here before when we lived by the chesed of Hashem. You've brought judgment into my house, and now my son is dead." Eliyahu takes the boy to a private space and calls out to Hashem, "My God, are you judging the widow who invited me in harshly?" And he calls again, "Hashem," and he requests the boy's soul back. And Eliyahu returns her son to her alive, and the widow says, Now I know you are a man of God. Surely she knew he was a man of God before. He'd given her a miraculous water jug and flower container. She had allowed him to live with her for a year, dangerously hiding him from Achav's dead or alive warrant. The widow tells Eliyahu that he has graduated. He came as a man of judgment. The old Eliyahu would have assumed the boy deserved to die. Now he went out of his way to fight with Hashem to do chesed and give the boy life. Rav Kook, his teachings are always beautiful. He says, the pure righteous do not complain of the dark, but increase the light. They do not complain of evil, but increase justice. They do not complain of heresy, but increase faith. They do not complain of ignorance, but increase wisdom. It's easy to see the world in black. Rav Kook teaches that what shows a person as being righteous is when they don't get stuck in the black, but strive to fix what they can in the world, to bring light to the darkness, to bring justice when needed, but also wisdom and faith when possible. Eliyahu went from Wadi Krit, a place of Karet, where there is no life. He gets to a place where there is life that is unconditionally given. Eliyahu acts as a true Ish Elokim, man of God, by adding the light instead of merely railing against the dark. He's a man of God who understands Hashem's mindset of judgment and chesed. Eliyahu is finally ready to move in a positive direction and orchestrate the climatic theological battle with Achav to add light and help the nation reach a point where they are worthy of receiving rain. Thank you for studying together, Lilui Nishmot Imoteinu Hayekarot, Esther Oppenheimer Aleha Shalom, and Sarah Shanker Aleha Shalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.